Ziata titzaveh et bnei Yisrael, vikhu elecha shemen zayit zah katit lamaor lehalot ner tamid. Now you shall command the children of Israel that they shall take for you pure pressed olive oil for illumination, to kindle the lamp continually.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Ta'anit Esther, which is today, Parshat Tetzaveh, which is this coming Shabbat, unless you're listening to this later, Purim, and Shushan Purim, which we like to call Yerushalayim Purim, and Parshat Zachor, which shares the Torah readings this Shabbat of Tetzaveh. We'll try to clarify everything that I just said and a lot more, but first let me tell you that recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 11th day of Adar, 5773, and today is Ta'anit Esther Mukdam. Ta'anit Esther that was pulled back earlier. In English, there is a word, albeit only in the Indian dialect of English, but it's a word that I like very much, so I shall use it. I've used it before. Ta'anit Esther this year is preponed. When Tisha B'Av and Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tzom Gedalia fall on Shabbat, they are postponed for Sunday. When Ta'anit Esther falls on Shabbat, it is preponed to Thursday. So here's the story. Purim is in most places around the world, in all places around the world and in most places in Israel, Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night, and Sunday, the 14th of Adar. In Yerushalayim, it is the 15th of Adar, which is Sunday night, Monday. There are several places in Israel where the people read Megillah on Saturday night, Sunday, as well as Sunday night, Monday. The Sunday night, Monday is not done with brachot, like it is on the 14th of Adar, for those places, and these places are known as mesupakot, cities that are in doubt as to whether they had the requisite wall from the time of Yehoshua, and I'll explain that also. But let's leave it at this moment that with Purim on Saturday night, Sunday, the day before is usually Ta'anit Esther. That would be Shabbat. We don't fast on Shabbat. We can't postpone it to Sunday because that's Purim. We can't put it after Purim because that's Shushan Purim. We can't put it after that because that's after the fact, and Ta'anit Esther is very significant in its being before Purim. So we pull it back. Friday is the first candidate, but it was rejected because the fasting on Friday would encroach a little bit on Shabbat, and we would enter Shabbat hungry and not in the best Shabbat mood. When a fast day is actually Friday, which can only happen in the case of Asara B'Tevet, then we fast on that day. We don't pull it back. In fact, also, when first day Pesach is Shabbat, then Friday is the fast of the firstborns, but that's a different story. We'll talk about that some other time. So, a fast day that's supposed to be on Friday is fasted on Friday, even though it encroaches a little bit on the Shabbat mood as Shabbat begins. Can't do anything about that. No other fast day can fall on Friday. And when Tanit Esther is being pulled back, Chazal, our sages, said, you know what, pull it back one more day to Thursday, and let's fast on Thursday, and Shalom al Yisrael. So that's the story. The usual date of Tanit Esther is Yud Gimel Adar, the 13th of Adar. This year it's the 11th of Adar, and it has a different flavor to it. Sometimes you get the feeling on Tanit Esther that Purim is so imminent that the Purim spirit mixes with the more sober, purposely used term, somber mood of Tanit Esther, and it sort of confuses things. But this time, we've got a clear shot at Tanit Esther, and Purim is not till next week, technically. All right? If that's confusing, listen to it again, and maybe it will be less confusing. Let me say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130 now, and then we'll continue. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi'ya'amod ki imecha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim l'boker shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeyafela l'ora umishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. And especially at this time of the year when we are celebrating the saving of the Jewish people and the removal of the Jewish people from that dark period into light, we think especially of Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, our brothers and sisters who are in difficult straits, and specific mention of Jonathan Pollard, who is approaching 10,000 days in captivity, much to the shame and disgrace of the United States of America and of Israel, because both should have done something a long, long time ago to get him out. Anyway, I wanted to make another comment about this postponing and preponing business. It turns out that, no, let me put it differently. Till I made Aliyah, I fasted on Tanit Esther. The rule is that night is Megillah reading. And if a person is strong enough, healthy enough, focused enough to wait until after Megillah before he eats and breaks his fast, then that's the preferred system. So you go the whole day fasting, and then you get dressed, or in costume, or fancy dress, whatever, you go to shul, and you hear Megillah, and you're still fasting. It's weird. But it's not weird, because that was the norm. Then I came on Aliyah, and I live in Yerushalayim, and for the last 31 years, Baruch Hashem, Kein Yerbu, most of the time, Ta'anit Esther is a fast day, which ends at stars out, early stars out. And then while the rest of the world and the rest of the country are going to Megillah reading and waiting until after Megillah to break the fast, I go home and I break my fast, and sometimes I turn on the TV and I watch Megillah reading at some kibbutz or moshav someplace, and relax, and our Purim is not till the following night, and the day that follows that. So that took getting used to, but it's very nice. Now it turns out that there are two situations on our calendar that help a little towards giving each Jew, no matter where he lives, a taste of both. For example, this year, when Tanit Esther is Thursday, then the fast ends in Yerushalayim at 5:58, at whatever stars out time you have in your locale, and you don't rush to go to Megillah, or you don't stay around for Megillah, and you don't fast for a longer period of time, and that's everybody. So what the rest of the world and the rest of Israel is doing tonight, this is what we are used to in Yerushalayim. And then there's the situation when our Purim, the 15th of Adar, falls on Shabbat. Then we read Megillah like the rest of the world on Thursday night and Friday, and Tanit Esther is Thursday, not because it is preponed, because that's the day it falls. And then we get a taste of what the rest of the world has as their norm, which means fasting until after Megillah reading and the rush to get Megillah reading in, whatever. So I've always found that an interesting kind of balance, and on a much more flippant note, I will hopefully have enough time to tell you about another kind of balancing things out, more in the line of Purim Torah and humor than something serious. But this is the fact on the ground. In fact, when Tanit Esther is preponed, then the fast, the Mincha, includes Avinu Malkeinu and Tachanun, which is something that none of us are used to for Tanit Esther. It's only in this situation, which is not super rare, but still, it's not every year, so we tend to forget that. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Tanit Esther itself, even though by the time you're listening to this, Tanit Esther will be over. And, let's leave it at that. It's still, what I'm about to say, goes for Shabbat and Parshat Zachor as well. This is an analogy, a mashal that I made up many years ago, and I'm sure that somewhere along the line I have used it on Torah Tidbits Audio, and maybe have written about it in the hard copy, but here it is again. And I'll tie it in, hopefully, with everything. Actually, it's two mashals, two mishalim. Okay, here we go. There's a young man, a boy, a teenage boy, just turning 18 or 16, as the state may be, and he just gets his driver's license, and he's very, very happy. He's been dreaming of this for a while, and he has a party with his friends for his birthday, and he drank a couple of beers, which I don't think his parents knew about, and he took his father's car keys. I don't think his father knew about that, and he takes his friends on a joyride, and he smacks up the car. The friends, as long as I'm making up the mashal, will keep it nice. The friends get away with minor scratches, but he is seriously injured. Several broken bones and some internal damage, and he's rushed to the hospital, and it's a long, long process, an operation, a second operation. He needed a transfusion, bones were set and then reset, physiotherapy for a long time, and finally, a year after the accident, he is healthy and happy, and the family is thrilled, and his parents make him a party. And they invite friends to the party and family to the party, and it's a very celebratory atmosphere, because of the full recovery of this young fellow. Now, sometime the parents need to be very strict and stern with this fellow about his driving under the influence and about his irresponsibility. And he needs a very, very good talking to. But not at the party. You don't want to spoil the party. The party is a true, happy celebration of his return to good health. Somewhere along the line, before the party, after the party, whatever, he needs to have the riot act read to him and all kind of other things. That's what happens in our perspective of Purim. Purim is a very festive occasion. Eating and drinking and giving of gifts to friends and taking care of poor people as well. But there is a very nagging and important question that we have to relate to. And that is, what happened to the Jews in the kingdom of Ahasuerus, 127 provinces scattered across Europe and Asia, or Africa and Asia, I think that's more accurate, to fall prey to the plight, the plot of Haman, and face fear of annihilation at that time. So our sages discuss the issue, and they conclude that attendance at the party that Ahasuerus threw, massive parties, 180 days worth of partying, that's a half a year, in celebration of his kingship, the Jewish people should not have gone to such a thing. The Jewish people in the Persian kingdom were mourning the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the exile of the people. They were looking forward to the end of the exile and the return to Eretz Yisrael. And at this party, according to our sources, Ahasuerus displayed and flaunted the silver and gold vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, which had been plundered by the Babylonians and plundered from them by Ahasuerus. We had no business being at such a party. We had no business celebrating such an event. And the sources also tell us that he paraded, Ahasuerus paraded in the garb of the Kohen Gadol, also part of that plunder from the Beit HaMikdash. Now, there are several other things that are also inputted into the picture of why the Jewish people deserved to fear annihilation at the hands of Haman. So when we are saved, we celebrate. But we need some time to reflect on what happened in the first place. Purim is not the right time to do that. Just like yelling at the kid for driving under the influence of beer and for taking his father's keys without his father's permission, he's going to get yelled at, not at his party. But it needs to be done. So Chazal created the day before Purim as a serious day, not a mournful day like the other fast days, but a serious day for introspection, known as Ta'anit Esther. We have Parshat Zachor on the Shabbat before Purim, and that gives us time and pause to reflect on who Haman was and where did he descend from. And then you look at the whole picture of Israel's enemies throughout Jewish history. We have to remember because the Megillah makes a point of saying that Haman was a descendant of Agag and Amalekite, and that brings us all the way back to Amalek, and you have to remember who Amalek's grandfather was. It was none other than Esav, twin brother of Yaakov, where the enmity from Esav to Yaakov is something that perpetuates throughout history. That's a key in Purim as well, but please, not on Purim. Don't discuss it on Purim. Don't bother me with that on Purim. Purim is a day to celebrate the Hashgacha of God in keeping an eye of what's going on, the heroism of Mordechai and Esther, and Esther and Mordechai, for what they did to bring about the success of the issue for the Jews, to bring about the tremendous turnabout that took place, v'nahafoch hu, this was overturned in our favor. That's what we celebrate on Purim. Ta'anit Esther is to reflect on the serious causes of the pre-Purim story. And I believe that Parshat Zohar is for that as well. And that's why I'm saying it now, even though for me it's still Ta'anit Esther. But by the time you listen to this, it probably will be after Ta'anit Esther, unless you're out in San Francisco, go Giants, and that kind of area. Maybe you could listen to it when it's still Ta'anit Esther. Again, not the point. The point is something we need to know about Purim itself. Now let me start the other mashal because it fits in also. Excessive eating and drinking in the context of what was done in these parties that I referred to can be one explanation, at least, as to what the Jewish people did wrong. And they need to atone for that. How do you atone for improper eating and drinking? There are two ways. You can abstain from eating and drinking. That's known as fasting. Or you can indulge in eating and drinking for the right purpose. L'shem mitzvah. L'shem shamayim. And we do that too. That's the two-prong approach to atonement for the sins of the generation that obviously didn't deserve to be wiped out, but deserved to be threatened with annihilation from the hand of Haman. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits Audio 4, Tetzaveh, Zohar, and Purim.
Yehudim. היהודים ונהפכו ונהפכו אשר נשתתו היהודים ונהפכו 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 אשר ישלטו היהודים אשר ישלטו היהודים
Someday I think I'll go through that song and count how many times the phrase V'na HaFochu repeats. But you're listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Tanit Esther, Parshat Tetzaveh, Parshat Zachar, Purim and Shushan Purim, and whatever else we fit in. And you just heard V'na HaFochu, which is the theme that I alluded to before. And that is sort of... adds to the joy of Purim because of the turnabout. What looked black became white, what looked dark became light, what etc., etc. And that's an interesting cause for extra joy, and it has its parallel in Pesach, which is no coincidence, 1 month from Purim. Because Pesach is not just the celebration of the redemption from Egypt. It is the celebration of the emergence from slavery to freedom. And there are there is an emphasis on reliving the experience of slavery in order to appreciate the redemption. Anyway, that's a Pesach concept, but it exists in Purim also. In fact, you want to really confuse things, Purim, its joyfulness, began on Pesach. That's something that a lot of people miss in the Purim story. Because Haman announced his plot to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai, on the 13th of Nisan, almost a full year, 11 months specifically, before his plot was to take place, was to come to realization. Now that's an arrogant thing to do, and that's a theme in the Megillah as well, the amazing arrogance of Haman, thinking that he was the one the king wanted to honor, etc., etc. But because he announced it early, the Jews were able to do something about it in the form of the initiative of Mordechai and Esther. Another thing that has always amazed me, which is a point to make about Purim, and that is Esther was installed in her place in the king's palace 5 years before Haman came on the scene and wanted to do what he did. And that explains why when Mordechai tells Esther through a messenger that she should go before the king, and she says, yeah, but it's dangerous to do, and you can't appear before the king unless you're summoned. And Mordechai said, who knows if this is why you are where you are in the first place. She bided her time for 5 years, never knowing what she was doing there, except she knew she needed to be there. And Mordechai knew that she needed to be there. It's an amazing thing if you think about it. But the story starts on Pesach, because when Esther says to Mordechai, gather the Jews of Shushan and fast on my behalf, and I and my maidservants will also fast, that was over the beginning of Pesach. So the Pesach-Purim connection is not just that they are mid-month of two consecutive months. It's much, much more than that. They are Geula and Geula, redemption and redemption, but the Purim story starts at Pesach. Okay. Now, with my first mashal earlier in the show, I gave you the mashal first and then the nimshal, what it was talking about. Now, I've already given you the nimshal, meaning the two ways of atoning, but I would like to share with you, I think, a nice analogy, and you could use it with children and they could appreciate it as well, as adults. A boy, could be a girl, but let's take a boy, this time age 8, receives for his birthday a box of crayons. Not just any crayons, but the super-duper deluxe box of crayons, 128 colors, and 2 crayon sharpeners. And this is something he's been asking for a while, and he finally got it. And he's excited, and he's good at drawing. By the way, if you go onto the Crayola website, you will find that they have retired certain colors for being not politically correct. When I was a kid, the box, not of 8, but of 24 even, contained a crayon which was called Flesh. Flesh. F as in Frank, L-E, S as in Sam, H. You don't have that color anymore, because people's flesh and skin are all different kind of colors. Not politically correct. Indian red no longer exists as a color of Crayola. And Prussian blue. Last time I checked the website, those were 3 colors that had been retired for not being politically correct. But I digress. In the Purim spirit, but I still digress. This boy draws beautiful, beautiful pictures, and he spent an hour doing such a picture. His parents were out shopping. They left him home alone, and when they came back, they admired his art and were not at all happy with the fact that he had drawn his picture on the wall in the kitchen. So the first thing they do is they have him scrub it with sponge, soap, and water and stuff like that. I don't know if crayons come out like that, but whatever they did, you make up your own. And now they are going to punish him. And the first thing they say is, give me that box of crayons. If you behave for a month with no problems, I'll give you back the crayons. That's the first punishment. Next day, after school, kid comes home, parents sit him down with several sheets of blank paper, and, to his surprise, his box of crayons. And they said, we're not giving you back this box yet, but we are giving it to you for the following purpose. You will spend the next hour drawing pictures on these pieces of paper. And then we will go together to the local hospital, to the children's ward, and hang them on the walls to brighten the day, the rooms of the hospital-bound children. Now here, it might sound contradictory, but it's not. He is atoning for his sin with crayons by abstaining from using crayons for his purposes, and by using crayons for a noble purpose. That's what we do. Eating and drinking on Purim is for a noble purpose. Abstention from eating and drinking on Ta'anit Esther is the other side of the atonement coin. Okay, allow me to expand upon the lead tidbit this week. We had a very tight Torah tidbit, not enough pages to put everything on. Lead tidbit was a little bit shorter than it usually is. but I would like to explore the topic. I called it the contrast of eight. This Shabbat, when we read Parshat Tetzaveh, we will read about the fashioning of the garments for the Kohen Gadol, the high priest in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple. The garments are for majesty, for glory and honor of the Kohen Gadol, of the Jewish people, and for God. It is a description of the original fashioning of the garments, and we have other places where we read about it or recite about it. I'm thinking in terms of the Musaf repetition on Yom Kippur that speaks of the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Let's suffice it to say that it was Jewish life at its peak, at the zenith. Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, plundered, people sent into exile, and a mere 70 years later comes this person who takes over the kingship of the Paras Umadai, Persian and Median dynasty, kingdom, and he throws an elaborate party. And the Jewish people come to this party, as well as everyone else in the kingdom, and they see the king, Ahasuerus, mockingly and arrogantly parading in the garments of the Kohen Gadol. This is one of our traditions. Imagine the contrast between the lofty image in our mind's eye of the Kohen Gadol in his eight garments on Yom Kippur going into the Holy of Holies, and how disgraceful, desecrated, those same garments of the Kohen Gadol are on the person of King Ahasuerus, who's parading about them and claiming that he is greater than the God of Israel, because the God of Israel's temple is in ruin, and he is showing off the gold vessels from the temple and parading in the garments of the Kohen Gadol. How stark a contrast. How sad. And again, we don't talk about it on Purim. There is the tiniest clue. And that's the scribal tradition of writing the chet of the word chur in the phrase chur karpas utchelet, the different colored fabrics that adorned the party room. And it's written large chet to remind us that it was the eight, chet is eight, the eight garments of the Kohen Gadol that this person, who subsequently gave his willing cooperation and permission to one of the greatest enemies of the Jewish people, to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai. It was Haman's idea, it was Haman's desire, and it was Haman's plot. But Ahasuerus was hardly an innocent bystander when he didn't say, no, this is wrong to do. He said, 10,000 silver talents into my treasury. And as Haman said, the people are really scattered around and don't pose any threat of revolution or resistance. Yeah, go ahead, do it. So Ahasuerus, who can come across in the Purim story as a little bit of a bumbling idiot, was not bumbling and was not an idiot. He was an arrogant king who did not lack negative feelings towards the Jewish people, and we should keep him in that context. I mentioned towards the beginning of the show when we were talking about the balance between a Tanit Esther followed by Megillah or not in Yerushalayim, outside Yerushalayim. I would like to be totally flippant now. It's an old favorite of mine, which begins with a play on words or includes an important play on words. There's an old riddle about how you would be able to tell Adam or Eve from every other human being. And the answer is no belly buttons, no navels. A navel comes from tying off the umbilical cord, and since Adam and Eve were both created as full human beings and were not gestated and nursed and, fed through an umbilical cord, they had no belly button, and everyone else did. Which means, however number of people have ever existed since creation of the world, let's call it N for the number of people that have ever existed, then the number of belly buttons that there are N minus 2. Until the Purim story, there was an imbalance of belly buttons to people, off by 2, until the Megillat Esther. In the Megillah, we read towards the beginning about Ahasuerus's party, and then it says, Gam Vashti Hamalka Asta Mishtei Nashim. Also, the queen Vashti made a party for women. Mishtei Nashim, Mishtei, Mem, Shin, Tuf, Mishtei, Tuf, Hey, means a party. Mishtei is a party. But, if you use a little Purim poetic license, Mishtei means from to, spelled with a yud instead of a hey. So the Pasuk rereads as, and Vashti too was made from two women. If Vashti was made from two women, then she had two umbilical cords at birth, and when they were cut and tied off, she ended up with two belly buttons. And since the Pasuk says, Gam Vashti Hamalka, also the Queen Vashti, it refers to the fact that the previously mentioned person, namely Ahasuerush, also must have been made from two women, and therefore he had two belly buttons. Now, until this day and into the future, if you take the total number of people that have ever existed, let's call it X, and you want to know how many belly buttons have ever existed, it becomes X minus 2 plus 2 equals X. And the balance of belly buttons in world history has been restored by Ahasuerus and Vashti from that original imbalance of Adam and Eve. Trying for a little bit of everything, I'm running very low on time. Let me finish by a point that I just touched on and elaborate a little bit more. Haman approaches Ahasuerus after he is super annoyed. Actually, let's go back a little step, and I'm sure I've said this in the past. Time for a refresher. The Megillah tells us that when Haman was elevated to his position of viceroy, he had the king order everyone to bow to him. And the Megillah makes a point of saying, U'Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachaveh. Mordechai refused to bow to him. Bowing out of respect to a leader is permitted in Jewish law. Bowing to a deity or an idol is not permitted. And that's how our commentaries explain that Haman either deified himself or wore an idol around his neck, some kind of the Persian equivalent of a crucifix, which would forbid a Jew to bow, and Mordechai did refuse. Apparently, Haman never noticed that, until the people in the courtyard of the king said to Haman, first they said to Mordechai, hey, how come you don't bow to Haman like we do? And Mordechai explained to him that he was Jewish, And they went and told Haman that Mordechai wasn't bowing to see what would happen. And what happened, we know what happened. So that's a nasty beginning. Even though that was supposed to be an introduction, you'll have to take it as is because we're out of time, enough time to say, if you're still fasting, fast well. If you are approaching Shabbat, have a Shabbat Shalom. Remember what Amalek did. Have a happy Purim, a happy Shushan Purim, and Mirtz Hashem next week is another show. L'hishtameah.